There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is a dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live again at the Old Dragon Journal podcast. This is your host Igor, and as always with me is my co-host Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi.
We've been away for a whole month again.
It happens every couple of months, yeah.
Yeah, you had work to do, I had some family emergencies that happened, so it's been a while. But we're back and we're hoping to actually resume our regularly, quote-unquote, scheduled podcasting.
Our regular irregularity.
Yeah. And we have another special guest with us. Special guest, introduce yourself.
Hi, this is Lee Murphy here, better known as Johnny Croat, and I write for Card Market Insight.
So what brings you to our lovely little place?
Okay, so basically I've been writing a series for much of this year called Myth and Magic. And each article we would focus on various bits and pieces that would relate to kind of, you know, magic cards and mythology that influenced them. You know, where was it that Mark Rosewater got his ideas for this particular card, and so on and so forth. And as we reach the end of the year, Aquaman is out in the cinemas this month. So I said I was going to do fish creatures, basically. And, you know, because Aquaman speaks to all sea creatures, as he does. So I said, So I basically said I would, you know, look to kind of expand past just the written article, and I contacted you guys and said, "Hey, let's kind of talk fish."
But before that, we have our usual Commander of the Week segment, right, Niksha?
That's correct.
Want to start?
Well, I've been playing a lot of K&T again. Because I haven't been playing much Magic because of work-related stuff. So when I do play Magic, I just want to, you know, blow off some steam. Just play huge foily stuff and attack people. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's pretty much it.
We did play the other day at my birthday party.
Yeah, we did. And I played K&T then again, didn't I?
You did have turn 4 Elishnor, if I remember correctly.
It was turn 4, yeah.
And you gave me an impossible choice. I had Fiend Hunter coming into play. And I had the choice either removing Elishnor or removing Silvara, the Celestia one. And I had to stupidly move the stupid Silvara. God damn it.
Well, yeah, that turned out to be the correct decision. Because, you know, even if you remove Elish Norn, I'll just keep ramping into big stuff.
Yep, also drawing cards.
And eventually, I mean, you're drawing cards as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you're drawing cards for free.
It's not for free, there's a big cost.
And eventually some of my big stuff will kill your small dude, and I get my guy back.
Mm-hmm.
Gal.
She's a really big gal.
Yep. And yeah, we had our final tournament after the Modern League, and as usual, I was 9th, just short of top 8.
But how many points?
By 0.7. If the guy I won against, so first round I got to buy, and then I lost, then I lost, then I won. Actually, no, I got to buy, then lost, then won, and then I lost, and then I won. So if the guy that I've beaten, like the only guy I've beaten before the final round, he dropped, and that actually destroyed my breakers, and I got out of the top 8. Because
womp womp.
But yeah, I was playing 8-rack, so I kind of deserve it.
I mean, that's not the best deck in the meta, so it's fine.
Actually, it's really good. It's really good, but I but it's well, just like every other of my decks, it's not complete, and it's not even mine.
What's it missing?
Leyland of the Void, because it turns out that when you play with 8-rec against Dredge, you're actually actively hurting yourself by using your discard.
Really?
Yup.
Surprised.
So yeah, I lost for playing the deck.
Mr. Johnny Crow, have you had any fun plays last couple of weeks in any format?
Well, speaking of Modern, if I was away this weekend, I would have played that particular tournament as well, and theoretically you could have borrowed my ley lines, but I mean, I'm mostly playing on Arena these days because just work commitments.
Mm-hmm.
These things happen when you have to adult. But I suppose the last major Magic tournament I played would have been the previous Modern League. And pretty much on turn 4 or turn 5, I get to resolve a Crypt Incursion in games 2 and 3 against Elves. And it's insta-skill. So, I mean, it wasn't exactly a classic kind of sequence, we'll say. It was simply tap 3 mana, win the game. But, you know, it was fun.
I like tap 3 mana, win the game buttons.
They're pretty good. I think every game should have one.
guess that leaves me for the Commander of the Week, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I finally put things back into Alesha, and it was wonderful to play her. Even though I didn't win any games, I managed to put Cat Jesus in the game, and it was awesome watching people squirm to see if they were going to pay the taxes or not.
Everybody had to remember that.
Yeah, you went to Burnish Heart, and then we reminded you. Oh, yep. By the way, turns out
that, you know, not being able to tutor is really good in Commander. I mean,
but yeah, I'm just happy to have Alesha back. It's not in her full power, the mode that she was a couple of months ago, but still.
It's something.
Oh, I just love the deck.
And moving on to the main topic then.
So, okay. you did mention something about the sea.
Yeah, okay. So, basic kind of core of the article is looking at classic sea beasts of legend. So, we're talking, kind of Octopus, Leviathan, and Kraken. And I use those three specifically because they're kind of present in a lot of the flavor text and key text of some pretty powerful blue and green cards. Slynn Voda, the uncommon legend from Dominaria. Such a fun set. You could draft legends nonstop. But, listeners will surely know that when you kick Slynn Voda, it returns all non-merfolk, non-krakens, non-leviathans, non-octopuses, and non-serpents to hand, okay? So, essentially, we're looking to kind of build a one-sided sweeper, in a sense. So, we wanted to build a commander deck that looked at utilizing the power of the sea, but also maintaining full flavor. Okay, so in a sense, we're not just our hands aren't just bound by the requirements of a particular commander or a particular set of spells that we need to fit, but by a very narrow focus team. So we basically sat down one evening and we said, look, we started building, we settled on our commander, which is the Slumbering Isle from, you guys will actually have to help me, from one of the commander sets. I don't play enough commander.
This year's the commander set, Ximedes, the Slumbering Isle.
Okay, so he was part of the Terras lore, but hadn't seen print until just recently. So, for the listeners, we jotted down on paper an absolute welt of blue and green-blue creatures and spells, and then we were looking up artwork to see does the artwork fit the team, and it does. So before we continue, I should note that the published article on the website, which will be live later on in next week, only has the main deck. It doesn't have the mana base printed alongside, mainly because the mana base is a bit of a shambles, okay? So, as blue-green decks go, I mean, we could have filled it with any number of green lands, but the problem with those green lands is there's just nothing very aquatic about the artwork or the teams involved.
Also, so, one big problem with the mana base is that we can't actually use any elves, the one mana dogs.
No, because elves don't live in the sea, and they don't... And, well, some of them do, okay, but none of those that do produce mana. However, we're fortunate that we can kind of fudge it a small bit. So, going off the deck list we have Birds of Paradise to begin with. Classic birds, okay? And Birds sneaks in primarily because the original artwork was meant for Tropical Island, or for one of the islands anyway. And so, basically, it was, we're going to use the original artwork so that we can say that there's plenty of water in the background.
Seawater.
Plenty of it. But there's, it's more or less a Dirtle deck, and I think everyone here just loves Dirtling. And it really fits the name of the podcast after all.
It's definitely not going to be a competitive EDH deck, that's for sure.
No, of course not. But the concept of the deck is to run out some one drop. We have some one drops. And then a slew of two drops, which are designed to either assist in ramping or to assist in holding back various armies of goblins or elves or whatever else is facing us across the table.
Basically land dwellers. We want to stop those guys.
Yeah, I mean, we have Fogbank in the deck, and Fogbank is and always has been one of the best blockers in the game.
What I like most about this deck is that we've put the Brine Elemental and Mazoon Shapeshifter in the deck, which is basically the Pickles combo.
It is. So, obviously the one half of that is massively on flavor, we'll say, with Brine Elemental, and the Shapeshifter less so. But, given that they're a Pickles combo, and you can't really separate them, so we felt justified in adding that in.
Plus, the Shapeshifter can become any creature the sea desires.
Yeah, this is true, but you know we could have had access to sundry other Shapeshifters on that basis, but we shied away from that particular kind of line because it takes us down dark paths that we don't really want to tread.
I mean, speak for yourself. Always want to go dark paths.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Clone, we could have put Clone in there. Such a classic.
Clone does have, if I remember correctly, sea in the background of the original art.
Clone is on a beach. And who knows, maybe we might actually rejig the list by the end of this cast. But I think we're better off where we are currently. Maybe we can try and get it together in paper someday, or, well, looking at the price of the deck in paper, maybe not. But we can.
The big part of that price, I think, is that one Tropical Island that you have in the list.
Yes, well, but still, we can probably get it together online relatively easily.
So. What other notable creatures of the sea we have in this deck?
We have classics. We have Merfolk Looter. Now, Merfolk Looter has been a staple in Standard for every rotation that the Looter has been legal for. All the way back to Exodus. We have Patrick Starfish, Sigil Starfish, who...
Patrick Scryfish.
An absolute fantastic kind of filtering creature. We have Thing in the Ice, who is doing wonderful and horrible things for Holy Diva in the modern leagues on Magic Online.
Mm-hmm.
We have Wall of Kelp, who not only blocks adequately, but also helps create additional blockers to try and get us to the late game. And what a late game it is. This is an impressive late game. If we can get to 6 and then 7 mana, we have ludicrous spells like, Giant Shark, which is just summon shark. I mean, it's
We mostly put that one because that's an ancient commander meme. Around 2010, 2012, There was, and still is, a podcast called CommandoCast. And the guy who used to run it had a liking for the card. And then fans of the show started buying the card out quietly, and they just started sending me, you know, one envelope, two envelopes, and it ended up with boxes and boxes of those damn things. So the guy has a monopoly on that card.
You know, giant shark buyout in the offing.
It caused a spike around, I think, like 5 cents. It jumped 5 cents.
Pretty. That's pretty impressive.
I mean, who wants the giant shark besides us and apparently Andy?
So, we also have access to some incredibly powerful cards from the Simic Combine, or as it might be known locally to us, the Shemich Combine. We have Fathoms here, and we were discussing this briefly before we came online, that such a powerful card that never really got a chance to shine in constructed in modern or standard, but it has such a fantastic home in Commander simply because of the likelihood that it survives.
Plus, we will be playing so many huge things in this deck that it's going to be bound to draw a couple of cards at least.
Absolutely. We have a classic Mystic Snake, which Mystic Snake has always been an amazing spell. I personally played a playset all the way back in Apocalypse Type 2. We have an Indestructible God, Journey into Nyx's Kruphix. And the advantage of Kruphix is that if we can get to Kruphix, Kruphix becomes a kind of a mana battery for us. So we have
Tassa. Speaking of gods,
Tassa. Yeah, we have Tassa again. Tassa helps us scry into our lands to hit our targets. We have Tatiova, the Benthic Druid, from again Dominaria.
Mm-hmm.
Basically helps us keep our hand full once she's in play, and gains us a few extra points of life to keep us ahead of certain debt. We have Gatecrash's Prime Speaker Zagana.
She's lovely.
She is a beefy merfolk.
Niksha, did you play this one in your 100-something deck in way back when?
Actually, I played it in my competitive 60 card deck. Because combining Prime Speaker Zagana with that card that somebody could have gotten a lot of bitcoins for. What was it called?
What?
Seance.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
When you have Seance, and then you make a Prime Speaker Zagana, and then you can populate your Prime Speaker Zagana to get even more cards, that's, you know, kind of fun.
What do you drove into, though, Niksha? More Prime Speaker Zaganas?
Oh, no, you play just one Prime Speaker Zagana. Uh-huh. You don't need one.
Okay.
No, of course, you draw into your, what's it called?
Tristani?
No. The guy that takes the boat over the water, what's he called?
Deadeye Navigator,
which we actually don't have, because he's not really a sea creature now, is he?
My argument was that, you know, if he knows how to navigate on the river, he's bound to know how to work seas, but, you know, I was overruled.
I'm sure his stick isn't long enough.
I mean, with that attitude, no, it is not.
Well, in a sense, the flavor does fit, because in the later stages of the game, if we move very briefly back over to the enchantments, we have Sunken Hope. So Sunken Hope, because we're you know, there will be some first-time listeners, hopefully. Sunken Hope is a 5-mana blue enchantment, and at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player returns a creature he or she controls to their hand. So a great many of our creatures have entered the battlefield abilities, or they, like Slin Voda, we might be in a position where we are forced to drop Slin Voda once we get to 8 mana, and we'd like to return Slin to our hands so that we can cast him for 10 mana.
Or to be a bit more obnoxious, you can just get back your Mystic Snake back to your hand.
Yeah, so it's a recurring counterspell, and if we could theoretically build an entire deck around Sunken Hope alone, because there are savage amounts of enter the battlefield effects when it comes to blue and green.
Yeah, you can just make a whole ETB tribe as a deck.
So we have, on that note, we also have Cartographer. And Cartographer, of course, is basically the original version of Civic Wayfinder. We could recur Cartographer over and over again. I mean, it's certainly not unheard of. In modern and legacy elves, using the Wirewood Symbiote to bounce back Shaman of the Pack turn after turn in order to win from behind a wall is certainly a valid avenue to victory.
What's another interesting card? Kronshal Crab, I always liked that guy because that was a really big card when I started playing back in the day.
Yeah, so this is... obviously, we might be in a position where we come up against some absolutely horrible beast that we can't deal with, and you know we might want it. And
a fun thing we can do is flip Kronshal Crab and then give somebody a Kelp token and take the best creature.
Yes, and most importantly, of course, is if it gets to the point where we. We're looking to do horrible things with kind of swapping tokens back and forth. We have effects that basically bounce creatures. Chromeshell Crab. We can always bounce Crab back to hand, and it'll come back to our hand if it's on the other side of the table. But like I said, this is an interesting, could be fun, and there are so many creatures in the deck that take advantage of the ability to be replayed a second time later in the game.
Well, we can also force other people to do that kind of strategy, whether they like it or not, because we have a mini combo in the deck with another crab, the Horseshoe Crab.
Yeah.
Because we have Retraction Helix, so we can bounce a couple of non-land permanents if we have enough blue mana.
It's a fantastic late game trick if needed, and if we need to burn it in the first three or four turns to buy a turn or to fake time walk, then so be it. But it works so well for standard Jeskai, so might as well put it to good use here.
So what are some of our finishers in the deck? So obviously we have Krakens.
Okay, well we have some beefy ones. We've got the Deep Sea Kraken. Can't be blocked, and we don't need to wait for 10 mana, we can suspend. Mm-hmm.
I'm regularly on the receiving end of Deep Sea Kraken because the guy who plays with us on regular, he often suspends this on turn 2 or 3 and just waits.
In multiplayer games he gets out really yep. fast.
We have Reanimator's favorite Leviathan, Inkwell Leviathan.
I love that guy.
And, I mean, okay, Shroud, we don't really have anything in our deck that we really, you know, needs to be attached or targeted on him, so we're kind of cool in that regard. And of course, Island Walk and Trample, so there's a greater than 0% chance of him connecting permanently. We have Breaching Leviathan.
He's cool.
And all, we have a grand, so, you know, we're not going to suffer for his enter the battlefield ability.
Yep, Stonehead Leviathan is also here. Moat on a stick.
Yeah, and he, of course, he creates the ability to make your island walkers, you know, unblockable permanently.
We, funnily enough, actually have a couple of them. Most notably, the giant shark.
Good.
Kedarket Leviathan, who is actually surprisingly good.
Oh, I freaking love him. I most like him when you have enemy dead to just keep bouncing things over and over again. But he's good just to be a big sweeper once and then again with unearthing.
It's a pity that we can't really get him back to hand with any tricks after unearthing, but I imagine if you've cast him and then brought him back into play, he's done his work.
I mean, we can Retraction Helix it if we're actually that desperate.
No, but if it leaves play, it goes away. But
yeah, I was saying if we really needed to, you know,
to do something. Okay, let's take a look at some of the instants and sorceries.
We don't have many of those.
No, it's mostly a creature deck. But we have massive amounts of flavor. We have Hydro Blast, which doesn't need any explanation.
Hydro Blast, not as good as actually Red Elemental Blast does, or Pyroblast, funnily enough.
No, of course, because your any blue deck is traditionally going to have an excessive amount of counter magic traditionally, but we don't have much counter magic.
Plus, this card has an excellent Kaya Foglio art.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is absolutely. We have Ponder, which has watery artwork again. We have the aforementioned Retraction Helix. Cyclonic Rift, which is an absolute all-star when it comes to Commander.
If not one of the best cards in the whole format, honestly.
And funnily enough, it was only so-so in Standard.
Of course, because 7 mana.
7 mana. We have Displacement Wave, which is potentially another game winner for us, simply because so many... We have, naturally, a chunk of 2 drops, 3 drops, and 4 drops, which are designed to gum up the board. So if it gets to a board stall situation, we could have a dozen creatures in play, and we just need to bounce all the small ones, and suddenly we're left with a massive amount of power on our side.
I mean, honestly, just paying blue and nothing to bounce all the tokens back to people's hands is really good.
That's true. We have Explore. The original artwork has water in it again. Same with Farseek. Into the Royal. It's for newer players, this is the original Blink of an Eye. And, I mean...
It's really good.
It's a fantastic card in Standard, so I can't see why it wouldn't be fantastic in Commander.
People play it in Commander because it's that flexible. You can bounce anything you want, and if you have enough mana and nothing to do with it, just draw a card. Because why not?
Okay. The next card on the list, and I'll make reference again to the fact that I mentioned that our mana base, as we have it currently, is an absolute mess, and we will presumably have that fixed by the end of the week. Is Engulf the Shore, and obviously it has a better home in more mono blue decks, but we're not necessarily looking for it to bounce our own creatures, even though we're not upset if we have to. And I say it's a bit of a shambles, the mana base, because a quick look at it, as we have it currently, we have, I think, one island, actually. One island in the list. But I mean, that's just we knew this when we were building it, that the mana base is going to be the most difficult part to build. Whelming Wave is fantastic. It is the most on-flavor spell in the entire deck. It's return all creatures to their hands, to their owner's hands, except for Krakens, Leviathans, Octopuses, and Serpents. And at 4 mana, it's basically going to do untold damage in the format, because when there are no kind of turn 3, turn 4, turn 5 creatures of that type played, generally speaking. We have a Miracle card in Devastation Tide, which is, again, River's Rebuke, effectively. Go on.
I was going to say, I always had a soft spot for Devastation Tide, but never seemed to be able to put it in any of my decks. But I just want to, but it never makes the cut, which makes it sad.
The Miracle cards were mixed bunch. I mean, there was the Mythic ones, obviously, saw a lot of play. And then the rare ones, not so much. And the uncommon, some of the uncommon ones saw play in draft, obviously. But still. We have Gush. Gush is a fantastic free spell if needed.
Oh, Gush never does anything fair. It's such an unfair card.
We have Submerge, which is an absolutely fantastic free spell, again.
What does that do?
So, Submerge is part of the Nemesis cycle, basically where if you control one land type and your opponent controls another land type, the spell is free. So, it's either free or it's 4 colorless and a blue, put a creature on top of its owner's hand.
But what's good about Submerge? It requires you to have an island, which we might have.
We'll probably have it by the time we fix this mana base.
And it requires your opponent to have a forest, and green is really all over the format, yes. And it might be the most popular color in the format.
For purposes of ramping, you're almost bound on green in some form.
So it's super easy for you to have this three condition met.
It's also, it doesn't say basic forest or basic.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the card came from a time when there weren't any non-basics. Islands and Forests barred the original dual lands. The shocks hadn't come into being yet. We have Urban Evolution. Urban Evolution was comboed with one of our Planeswalkers in Type 2 a couple of years ago in Turbo Fog. And Urban Evolution is fantastic. Draw three cards, play an extra. I mean, it's beautiful. It's pack one, pick one in the draft format that it's in.
Plus, it does everything our deck needs.
Yeah, it draws us into the mana to drop our later spells, and it's commander. You're never really concerned if you draw two of your late game threats and are forced to discard them, because you have more to come. So,
mm-hmm.
Next one on the list is Crush of Tentacles. So again, Crush of Tentacles is effectively a River's Rebuke again. It's it's a double-sided River's Rebuke. Everyone bounces their permanents, but it has Surge, so you can use one of your free spells if you want in Gush, tapping the mana before you return the islands. Draw your cards, bounce some permanents, and if the Surge cost was paid with Crush of Tentacles, you get to put a 8/8 Octopus token into play. And then, of course, you probably have some mana in your pool afterwards, and you get to place it. Coastal Breach. Undaunted. Undaunted is not a... it's a commander mechanic.
Yep.
It's not something that I necessarily kind of think of whenever I'm looking to build a deck. I mean, this is my first commander deck that I've had any involvement in. But again, it's yet another bounce all the permanents, reset the game spell. And
I mean, paying 4 mana to return a mana permanent that is on hands is usually nice.
Yeah. And we're... Okay, there's some small chance that it will not always be a good play, but I mean, that's the case for every spell, isn't it? Can't always be making the optimal plays. We have an artifact kind of goblin guide in Explorer's Scope, which is there... to help us try and fix our mana if it can.
And it's the only artifact we have, because most other things, something with Sol Ring, doesn't serve the flavor.
No, everybody wants Sol Ring in their deck. Dan Bach from Power 9 Games is looking to get the card banned since forever.
I mean, it's arguably more powerful than Black Lotus.
Oh, arguably. I mean, it's 2 mana versus 3 mana used once. So we have some enchantments. We've mentioned Sunken Hope. So we can bounce creatures at will. The Bident of Tassa. So this isn't necessarily for us to draw cards with. This is more to force our opponents to attack into us when they're in an unfavorable situation. Given that we will presumably have a string of walls, 0/3s and 0/4s in play.
And on the other hand, they don't have to attack us. There's, other guys they can attack, not our huge creatures.
Of course. I mean, like, in a commander game, you get to choose which turn you're activating it on. So, you get to pick which creature or which opponent is forced to attack. And then, of course, if they don't have to attack you, they can attack somebody else, but they have to. We have Search for Azkanta. Now, Search for Azkanta is kind of super powerful in a way, and also not super powerful. It's totally on flavor, but it only fetches a handful of cards from the deck.
Yeah, it's kind of bad for the deck, but still on flavor, so...
I think it works best in the deck because we could be in a position where we're drawing a lot of cards early in the game, and we're using Merfolk Looter to cycle quickly, and then suddenly we're up one mana. And as we've just gone over all of the instants and sorceries, they're all really powerful, and we want to get those into our hands very quickly. so that we can control the board moving forward.
So we can also look at it as just a really expensive ramp for one.
Yeah. On the other hand, you can choose not to flip it. You can just use it as a square one, basically, on the beginning of upkeep.
Given that much of our deck is 6, 7, and 8 drops, you know, if we're sitting there with two lands in play and we're looking for the third land, you know, we need the ability to kind of get rid of these things very easily. And with potential advantage, 7 cards further into the game. So, let's see. Planeswalkers next. We have 3. We have 2 Kioras and 1 Jace, Jace the Pirate.
Sexy Jace is his name.
He is. Kioras are fantastic. I've always had a soft spot for Kiora, given that the color combination is usually not played in Standard. She's often overpowered for a Planeswalker. And I played Kiora the Crashing Wave alongside the Urban Evolution with Turbofog.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing the deck maybe 2 weeks when Mike Majors won the Grand Prix with the deck, and you know, I obviously didn't have the same level of success that he had.
Of course.
But it was nice to know that I was looking at the same deck that would ultimately win the Grand Prix.
I always had a soft spot for Kuras as well, but I rarely played the blue-green color combination in Commander. That's a problem.
But I've taken the deck to Grand Prix and done horribly with it. I mean, this was obviously a Maze's End build, and you know, actually, on that note, I will mention that for 2019 there is a I'll be focusing mostly on Modern. And we will be launching the Twitter Builds Modern hashtag, whereby Twitter input kind of helps fine-tune a turbo fog deck, with the win condition being Maze's End. So that is going to be very interesting and possibly very frustrating as well.
So, with the internet helping build a deck, that can end only successfully, I'm sure.
It will be absolutely amazing. It will be. We have Pirate Jace, and Pirate Jace is brilliant because, again, we want to try and loot through our deck as quickly as possible during the early turns in order to kind of get our mana into play, in order to hit the sweepers to kind of buy us an extra couple of turns. And if we don't have creatures in play, Jace will put a token down for us. And often, you know, the token will be a chumper, fair enough. But again, it's all about going a little bit wide as early as possible to prevent those first 5 or 6 turns of 1 damage, 2 damage, 5 damage, 10 damage, you're dead. So, just about putting up walls. We have the second Kiora, the Master of Depths from Battle for Zendikar. And the best thing about her is that we can use her pre-combat if we're talking Birds of Paradise or something like Kiora's Follower or Merfolk Looter in order to get double duty from those creatures.
Or and, just our commander who produces yeah. 2 mana.
Yes, of course he does. And of course she untaps the land as well. So we can get her down on turn 4, and potentially we're looking at, you know, being able to drop a 2-drop shortly thereafter. Her downtick then obviously helps mill through the deck again in order to find lands, and dumps the rest. But you take what you can get. And all these Planeswalkers have... Jace has one of those ultimates that's not an ultimate. It's basically creates copies of himself, which you would then use to help dig more cards or to put up extra blockers. The Master of Depths, her ultimate is whenever a creature comes into play, you can have it fight another creature. And given that we have such a huge late game with big beefy 6/6s and 7/7s and 8/8s, This is effectively every time we play a creature, we're killing an opposing creature. And then we get to put some octopuses into play. And Kiora, the Crashing Waves ultimate, is at the beginning of your end step. Put an unbeatable 9/9 blue monster into play. Which is, I mean, it's just wonderfully on team, I think. And these are 3 and 4 mana planeswalkers. And we all know that in Magic, 3 and 4 mana planeswalkers are broken.
Also, it's actually kind of sweet that you can untap Arx Mathis and Birds of Paradise at the same time with Master of Depths, because the Slumbering Isle isn't actually a land.
Oh, yes.
And you can just not remove the last counter from Arx Mathis until you play a massive bounce spell, get rid of all creatures, and then finish them off with your commander.
Yeah, because commander damage is a thing.
Yeah, just swing twice and you won.
Okay, so we're not actually going to discuss the mana base because, well, I mean, I've already said it's a bit of a shambles.
A little bit.
We have some certain lands that are no-brainers. I mean, Yavimaya Coast, Vivid Creek, Tropical Island, Terramorphic Expanse, Teferi's Isle, Sheldock Isle. Lots of blue lands that come into play tapped. And they can either cycle or they... Teferi's Isle will gain us 2 blue every second turn. And
yeah, Teferi's Isle is a bit weird in the phasing.
We can... there's ways to break that in the late game with the... you'll excuse me. One of our creatures basically puts unused mana into the pool.
Krufix.
Yes, and... Krufix, of course, the god. So, you know, before the land phases, we can put the mana into the pool, and we still get it. You know, we have Lumbering Falls, which is a creature land, and then, as I said, we have some lands that cycle. We have Minimo, School at the Water's Edge, from Champions of Kamigawa, which untaps a legendary permanent, and we have a few legends in the deck. Slin Voda is one. The commander is another.
The gods.
We have the gods, and we have
Dromokratis, Vortus.
Tatiova is legendary uncommon, which is.
Although I hope she's not going to be tapped a lot, because that's not what she's here for.
No, well, she's not really there for attacking. She's there to sit there, look pretty, draw a card, gain some life. We have Cephalid Colosseum, which was a broken card in Type 2, back in Odyssey block, Odyssey days, and you have to imagine in Commander, it's so much better again.
This is still broken in things like Dredgen Legacy.
Yeah, you hit Threshold so quickly, and suddenly you're refilling your hand. You don't, obviously, when it comes to Dredge, you don't care about putting the card into your graveyard, because you can always loam it back. But, so, we will... probably have this mana base fixed in the next couple of days.
Because you're missing islands.
We are missing islands, yes. I mean,
kind of important.
That's not like a whoops, an oversight. It's more of a, just us throwing a huge chunk of on-team, colorless producing lands like Blighted Cataract, and Bant Panorama, which helps smooth out the mana a little bit for us.
Plus, it's a really money-efficient fetch land.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. We'll figure it out. Don't worry, listeners. You know.
Thing I wanted actually to say about this deck, if somebody wants to play something like this, it's not going to be that expensive. They just need to cut the obvious Tropical Island, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so the 2 most expensive cards in... the list that we have in front of us is Tropical Island, which is somewhere in the region of $300, and then you're looking at a $50 Misty Rainforest. Okay, I mean, obviously in Europe these cards are cheaper. Go to card market, and you'll get them there for a lot less than you pay for them in the States. But as a commander deck thereafter, you're looking at probably spending less than €300.
Yeah.
With the deck together, which is, I mean, €300 is what you're looking at paying to put together almost any standard deck, fully teched.
Plus, I'm going to bet that you're going to be having most of these cards back home, my dear listener. Because a lot of these cards are cards you just have. Funnily enough, one of the more expensive cards in the deck, Wall of Kelp. And I think the deck can function without Wall of Kelp, depending how dedicated you're going to be to the flavor.
Yeah, well, you can always... You can always...
Chasm's Skulker is still a thing instead of, you know, Wall of Kelp for Dolgans.
Did Wall of Kelp spike because of the Elder Dragon?
I think it's gonna be more of because of the buyouts.
Well, buyouts because of the Elder Dragon, right?
Possibly. I think it actually, yeah, it did. God damn.
you can pick up a Wall of Kelp quite easily for 4 to 5 euro.
And now I have to see how much is it on the card market, actually.
Yeah, 5 euro.
Four and a half, but you can get it from like two euros. So it's not gonna break the bank.
That's pretty much it. I think we've kind of covered everything. I mean, we have a few other horrible creatures in the deck. Scourge of Fleets, which is just there to...
Scourge of Fleets is really nice when you actually have islands in the deck.
Yes. We can currently bounce...
one toughest thing.
Well,
two, actually. We have a Shockland and a Original Duel.
Yeah.
We do. Mm-hmm. Yes. We'll have that fixed. We have
Colossal Whale is a bigger offense to me than, you know, the Scourge of Fleets. But Colossal Whale still has a function.
We can you can look at bouncing creatures that bounce tokens. You can bounce any number of black creatures, which often at this level of game in Commander, several of them have detrimental enter the battlefield effects.
I'm just happy to be playing Nezahal, honestly.
Oh, Nezahal.
Dino.
I play Nezahal in Standard, or I did in the last season. Teferi, as powerful as Teferi is, there isn't a home really for him right now. I know that we have the World Cup coming up the weekend after we recorded this. Well, I don't expect to see Jeskai Control do very well there, because that deck just doesn't run enough counterspells, and there are too many creatures, big creatures in the format that can't be countered, including Nezahal, Carnage Tyrant, and Niv-Mizzet.
Oh yeah.
And if you can't counter them, then you need to be running a deck that can race them, or go around them, or go over them, and Jeskai Control just doesn't do that, in my experience. I think the best deck right now is by a long shot is any variant of Drakes.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a Phoenix deck, but there's something nice about playing, you know, a turn 5 or a turn 6, you know, like 10-4 Enigma Drake and then giving it haste.
Boom.
So, but I do expect to see a lot of good Drake decks this coming weekend. That's it. We have a Sky Swallower.
The Simic Sky Squallower, he is a beast. He has always been the scourge of casual tables, and hopefully he remains in the future.
He's not as powerful as he used to be. 6/6 flyers that can't gain any buffs are no longer as dangerous as they were 5-6 years ago.
But Shroud is still a difficult thing to handle.
Yeah, I mean, there's more than one inexperienced player has put themselves in a position where they think they have a combat trick to save themselves in combat, and then you have a judge or some passing railbird point out, your creature has Shroud, so you can't pump, you can't bounce, you can't do X, Y, and Z.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why they removed Shroud from the game.
It was a problematic mechanic and counterintuitive in terms of how players see games.
Honestly wish to have Shroud back instead of Hexproof.
Yeah, especially for that stupid Hydra.
Actually, speaking of that, I'd much rather slivers go back to the way they were, that
that's as well,
get affected, rather than just your slivers get affected, because in a way that kind of ruined
the sliver flavor, yeah.
But again, I mean, that was done for the same reason that Shroud became hexproof. It was just, your effects should be more or less one-sided, because if it gets to the point, I mean, we all know the classic adage in Magic, mat is for blockers. if you end up in a sliver mirror, then both players are looking to calculate mats on an ongoing basis, and it presumably leads to several judge calls where, you know, both players have miscalculated, and then you end up with horrible positions where warnings are being handed out simply because the board state, you know, required calculators. And if you're in round 8 or 9 of a tournament, doesn't matter how many calculators you have on the table, you know, your brain can be drained, and you're trying to autopilot at that point of a tournament. Okay, so I think that's more or less it for the fishy business.
Mm-hmm. Where can actually our good listeners find you yet again?
Okay, so this will be going up on the Card Market Insight blog. So that's cardmarket.com/en/magic/insight. I'm sure Igor and Nikshaw will be posting a link once they are.
Definitely.
And as soon as this is done and dusted, I'll be attaching the link to the article as well.
You can expect in a couple of days to be up.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right from my end. I gotta put in one or two more paragraphs on one or two super legendary fish.
Is that it for the
topic? I think that's it for this. So, what's next?
I think we're going to wrap things up slowly, because this is the only thing we have prepared.
Okay, well, you know, short and sweet.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you ever so much for having me on your podcast.
If ever you want to return to the podcast, you know where we are. We always want to have you back gladly.
Okay, I will take you up on your offer. Okay, I will leave you and bid you all a good night.
Thank you, and have a good night, sir.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
Well, Miksha, it remains for us to close up the show, right?
Yep. We didn't miss out on that much events.
Luckily.
While we were absent. I mean, we did miss out on the complete Ultimate Masters thing, but we will be doing, we'll do some things to catch up.
We do have one thing to do in the next couple of weeks, and that is the year in review.
Oh yeah, year in. Oh yeah, a random fact. I'm only missing 2 more worms to have a complete collection.
What you missing?
The pre-release foil dirt color worm, and funnily enough, I think it's spined worm from like 8th or 9th, something like that. Like just a random common that whenever people were ordering online, it was out of stock. I just don't know how. But it's out of stock. Give me a second.
Because I'm on the Card Market right now, so I want to check.
Just flip through the binder. I mean, I got the Commander Precon Worm Coil.
You said spine worm, right?
No. What I meant was, let me just check it. Yeah, spine worm from 9th.
You have them on market for like 22 cents.
I know, but nobody's ever ordering from market, and I don't feel like it.
Make sure. What? Could you maybe message our good friend Andra?
Okay, but then I'll also have to get the Scissors Lizard, Rock Lobster, and Paper Tiger.
And what's the other worm you needed?
The other? Yeah, he's dirt cheap as well. It's the Dirt Cowl Worm, pre-release foil.
I mean,
there's one for like 2 or 3 euros, and then there's the other one for like 600 euros.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's two versions of the card. And yes, one euro is the cheap one.
Oh, the 600 euro one is like a misprint or something like that.
On the other hand, there is a $275 version.
Yeah, that's the. It's probably faulty, or it was like. There's only like one listed on the market, right?
There is one for 500, one for 275.
Yeah, so there's like two of them in Europe, so I just don't count them. They are pre-release foil dirt call worms. Doesn't matter what version.
You have, for starting at 1 euro in bad condition. Good condition is 4 euros.
Yeah, of course I need a mint condition foil one. And then
so, after that... So, and have it all.
So, I but once I have them all, I just... I mean, what do I do next?
I'm not sure. You make them all, I don't know, alter them or something?
No. I'll be looking to foil them all. Or something like that, I guess. I mean, that's what I'm always looking to do.
I think we've done with the podcast is rambling about you getting a new pet dog.
Me getting some worms. Yeah, we're done. We're done.
We're done, but we're glad to actually be back again. I've missed this for a whole month.
Yeah, and soon some vacations will be up, so time.
Well, this has been episode 82 of the Elder Dragon Journal podcast, and this has been your host, Igor, and as always, with me was the Nick Chef.
Yep.
Like we said, episode 82, and as always, the Emperor protects.
Blub, blub. That was my fish impression.
Blub, blub, blub.